Okay, so there's a question about what is the purpose of life, and what for the younger generation deciding what they'll do in life, what career, what life path. How do they decide what to do? Where is the meaning? Okay, that's a big question. That's a very big question. It can be tricky to explain the worldview of Buddhism to the younger generation, because, or any kids at all, really, because the older you get, the more Buddhism makes sense. The more you have life experiences which provide perspective, and then Buddhism is like, okay, good, so you have that perspective, right? Now we can agree on a bunch of things based on that perspective. But the younger generation, they don't have that perspective yet. And it's very easy for them to have an attitude that's like, they're going to live forever, they're never going to get old, they're never going to die. It's hard for them to kind of see the bigger picture of life. Buddhism very much invites us to see the big picture in life, and even beyond just this one life. You know, like Buddhism is very concerned with, well, what happens to us after we die? And where were we before we were born? So it's not just this life. And so Buddhism has this kind of view of how life works, which is kind of a cyclic timeline. It's not just a linear timeline. One of the, you might say, unfortunate limitations of kind of Westerner thinking is the Westerner way of seeing time is like a linear time. You know, like you're born, and then there's like this straight line between you and when you die. And, that, you know, it's not a cycle. There's not really this worldview with a cyclic thing. But Buddhism is very much about the cycle. You know, it's just endless lives, one after another. So there's this bigger picture in Buddhism called samsara, which is, it's like endless lives, endless cycles of life. And where will we go from life to life? That's a big question that Buddhism asks us. Ancient India had a strong conviction, which came out of Brahmanism, that life after life after life, there's this endless samsara. It's not just the Buddha who believed this. The concept of samsara predates the Buddha, predates Buddhism. The Hindus 100% agree about this samsara thing. And there were a lot of psychics and holy men who, at the time, all agreed that this was how the system worked when they used their psychic powers. It wasn't just one holy man, it was a bunch of holy men. And they all came to a consensus that this is how it worked. They sort of compared notes. Quite a few of them had psychic powers. And so the Westerner worldview does not really grant that there are these psychic powers, and does not really grant that you could arrive at a bigger picture of how samsara works. So Western thinking doesn't really have a place at the table for this concept of samsara and for this cyclic way of seeing lives, you know. Basically, endless rebirth in samsara. So the Buddha strongly encourages lay people to do their best for living up to morality, sila, like taking the five precepts, You know, not killing, not stealing, not lying, no sexual misconduct, and no drink and drugs leading to carelessness. So in Buddhism, those are the five minimum things necessary to be maybe not 100% perfect at, but darn good at. Darn good at. And that can, that sort of ensures that our future rebirths will be fortunate ones, where we are reborn either in the human realm or even better yet, the Deva realm. And there's tons of suttas about this. There's hundreds of them talking about this in various ways. So Buddhism strongly recommends, you know, don't go to the unfortunate rebirths, you know, like to be reborn as an animal or a ghost or a hell being. And it is through bad morality that one goes down there. And once one goes down there, it's very hard to come back up again. It is extremely hard to come back from that. So Buddhism doesn't really frame it as there being any meaning to life, actually. It's more like it's a cycle. It's a cycle. And now, if we're wise, we will we'll do our best to have fortunate rebirths. And then for those spiritual practitioners who really make an effort, one can achieve either Nibbana, and that's sort of eternal freedom from samsara. Yeah, so that's the solution. If Buddhism were to point at anything as like truly meaningful and permanent in life, that's it. It's Nibbana. Yeah, that's the one like eternal thing in Buddhism. Everything else is impermanent. So whatever people might want to accomplish in their life, like, oh, I'm gonna build the best amusement park ever. Okay, well, that's pretty cool. A lot of people have fun, but you know, it might last 100 years, maybe 150 years tops, and then it will be torn down. It won't be permanent. So Buddhism would say, well, okay, you know, you deserve credit. You deserve the good resultants if you do something nice like that, but you could do better, you know. The more you aim at this eternal Nibbana thing, the better, because it's eternal rather than permanent. Rather than impermanent. So Buddhism encourages us to try to see that bigger picture. Now, as to what to do for a living, Buddhism just warns us to stay away from what it calls wrong livelihood. So people who have jobs or careers which are founded upon immorality, okay? So what is specifically listed in the suttas as to like wrong livelihood, it'd be like selling weapons, selling poisons, drugs, slaves. It actually says trade in flesh, which might mean slaves. It could be argued that trade in flesh means even selling meat, like, let's say, selling chickens or something, you know, because chicken meat is a type of flesh. It just says trade in flesh, and there's some room there for interpretation. Does that just mean slaves, or what does that mean? Does that mean prostitutes? That's kind of trade in flesh, selling, you know, sex. Anyway, it's a fairly short list of wrong livelihoods. It's only about a paragraph long, and it's very general. Now, since the time of the Buddha, you know, those were very simple times. I would argue there's a lot more wrong livelihoods these days that the Buddha probably would have said something about. There's a whole lot of ways to be evil that have been invented, you know, since 2,500 years ago. So the Buddha would probably have something to say about those livelihoods as well. So I think the Buddha would coach your son and say, you know, at least stay away from the evil one, jobs, you know, evil careers the best you can. Buddhism doesn't really, Buddhism grants a lot of flexibility as to the lifestyle of the lay people, you know, what sort of job you get or what kind of lifestyle you live. Buddhism is okay with that, just so long as you don't do immoral things. It's more like a list of don'ts, you know what I mean? And then there's freedom to do whatever you like once you've avoided the don'ts. Yeah. Now, the more merit you make, you are rewarded for that. For those who are very, you might say, generous and kind and, you know, caring. You know, a lot of self-service and a lot of sacrifice for your family and your community. Buddhism does acknowledge, oh yeah, you get rewards back for all of that. And that will affect just how good your future rebirth will be. You know, instead of just being like a fairly impressive angel, no, you can be like this really radiant, glorious goddess instead, you know, because your service was higher or more or whatever. You were more generous or more, you know, made more merit. So Buddhism has a lot to say about making merit. And some acts are more meritorious than others. I won't get into it too much right now. But so it isn't merely just avoiding a bunch of don'ts. You know, like for all the merit we make, there are commensurate rewards as well. As to a meaning of life, Buddhism is kind of shakes its head and says, like, if you really think over this cyclic existence thing and impermanence, where's the meaning? Where's the meaning? So this is quite a kind of a bummer, you know? It's kind of a bummer that it is uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable thought to think, where's the meaning? Because we would very much like for there to be meaning. I could ramble all day on this topic, but I'll try to keep it brief. There's this author that I kind of, mostly respect, named Yuval Harari. He's a historian. And one of his big, you might say, talking points that kind of made him famous is he noticed that throughout history, when you look at different cultures all over the world, there's a pattern you keep seeing again and again. And it goes like this. Every culture has a story that they live by. And that story provides them a sense of meaning. And we as humans, it seems, are almost like geared to need to feel like there's meaning in our life. Darn it. You know, there has to be some meaning here. Why are we alive? Like, what are we doing here? There needs to be some meaning. You know, come on, Venerable Subro, tell me this isn't just meaningless. That'd be so depressing, right? That'd be so depressing. And the Buddha's got some uncomfortable topics to think over. And he, you know, it's very philosophical. It's like, well, if you got cyclic rebirth, well, where's the meaning? And the Buddha's like, well, attain Nibbana. There's your meaning. That's his answer. That's where the meaning is. Or make the most merit you can if you're not going to ordain as a nun or a monk or whatever. That's the big picture. Yeah. Every culture has a story that it lives by. It's a common story. And all of the, you know, stories you hear when you're a kid, you know, all the ways that we get along in a culture, all the ways we get along together, there's a story underneath it all. It's a common story underneath it all. So in a sense, you kind of do need to have a story that everybody agrees on and lives by, because that story unites everybody. It gets everybody cooperating together in a culture, cooperating together, you know, in a country, cooperating together, even in a family. There needs to be kind of like a plot to the story, and everyone is agreeing to cooperate, predicated on that story. So you need to have one. You need to have one. If there's no agreement, then the world kind of falls apart. Okay? Everybody just sort of wanders off in every different direction, and there's no cooperation, and that's no good. Every religion has its worldview about how the universe works, etc., you know? And Buddhism has its worldview as well. And it is based upon the experiences of these monks who were not just arahants, but also psychics, and saw how that cyclic rebirth works. And it isn't just the Buddhist monks and nuns saying this. It is also the Hindu monks saying this. So there's agreement even across religions about that being the case. The Buddha had many psychic powers, and one of those psychic powers is when someone dies, he sees where they go next after they die, what realm they go to. It's as though, well, he gives it an analogy, it's as though somebody exited out the door of one building, walked down the street, and went through the door of some other building. You know, they like exited one life and then went into another life. He can see where they go. And people would come to him and ask, oh, so where did that person go who just died? And the Buddha would be like, well, they went here. They went to this other place. And other monks and nuns could see this too. And they didn't argue with each other anywhere in the suttas. They didn't argue saying like, well, you say they went to the ghost realm, but no, that's not where they went. They went to the animal realm or whatever. Like there's no record of such argument that I'm aware of. Anyway, so that is one of the psychic powers. So you never know. If we all meditate enough, we might just get such a power. That'd be cool. Okay, maybe that's a good place to stop. But yeah, this is a psychic power that even people today will claim to have. Even people who are alive today claim to have this exact power. I've met one of them, by the way. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, more than one, really. So, but yeah, I'll end here. And it's really hard to impress this kind of stuff on the younger generation, you know. Yeah. It's really hard to think of the big picture when you're still young, you know. Yeah. Okay, anyway, it's a tough answer to give.